Rated Movies.
I'm Matt Fisher.
I'm Ryan Whedon.
And this is part three of our ongoing exploration of the Mildred Pierce miniseries.
Todd Haynes' Mildred Pierce.
Yes.
The HBO miniseries. Good. If you haven't watched it yet and you're listening to this, get on it because I am
drunk. Glass of wine per episode is what the doctor calls for with this.
As I reach for my Chardonnay. But it's so good. Like, I'm digging this. Like, honestly, watching it all at once, too, is a lot of fun. Like,
yeah, Todd Haynes seems to understand the episodic formula.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the one-hour format, it really suits this.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't want to watch it in, like, 1 5-hour block.
Well, it's, and the credits, it says that it's a film by Todd Haynes. And
okay.
I was like, well, why didn't he just make this a film? Well, duh, it's 5 hours. No one's going to watch that.
But, like, you know, we live in a time when you can watch things at your leisure. And, like, Martin Scorsese says that The Irishman should not be seen in, like, hour chunks or episodic chunks. And this one, it really feels like it's supposed to. Like, when it ends, it feels like a break is necessary.
Mm. End of the chapter, basically.
Yeah, because, well, especially chapter two, that was an emotionally harrowing chapter. Like, I think we needed a little breather after that one.
Tell me about it.
Part three, the one that we just finished, doesn't quite have the highs and lows of two.
No, you're right.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Two had dizzying highs and terrifying lows. So it's good that we have something that's a little bit more
even keeled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to say there aren't stakes here. There's some drama.
Well, because this shows her opening her restaurant.
Well, okay. So I was noticing the first two start off with like swinging 30s music playing. And then it shows her doing the first episode is her being in a kitchen making dough.
Mm-hmm.
Second one shows her being a server, like practicing being a server.
Mm-mm.
This one.
Yeah.
Does not start off with the music and just shows her cuddling Vita.
So it's you're right.
We see
right.
a shift now. She's not focused on
domesticity
herself.
Or yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
she's focused on Vita now.
Okay, sure.
And then eventually, once we get that cuddling scene, it cuts to the first night of the restaurant. That's when we get the swingin' 30s music.
Okay.
So it's like, it's sort of like, it's still the same Mildred, but she's now got a shift in focus.
Sure. Her values are a little different from what they used to be.
Ray died, yeah. Just subtle things like that. I love.
I mean, they do a good job of showing like the tension. Like she just opened the restaurant. No one's in there. She's got a staff just waiting around. And there is that like tension of like, oh,
is
no one's coming in.
Yeah.
Because they do that exterior shot of the restaurant and no one's driving by. I was like, and honestly, like I saw that. I'm like, who thought this was a good idea to open up shop here? There's no traffic.
I do like the idea. Okay, so it seems like this restaurant is just like a house in a neighborhood that like turned into it. I kind of love that idea of like a residential neighborhood and one house on a corner is a restaurant. I don't know. Like, why do we have to have zoning in that way? I don't know. It seems kind of cool to have it this way. Just saying.
I liked it. And I remember this from the first time that I watched it. I was like, okay, her business wouldn't be hopping the first fucking night.
Apparently.
Oh, shit. Hold on. Where's my phone? Oh, it's over there. I wanted to do an inflation calculator because...
Go ahead. You can go grab it.
Okay.
We were talking about doing this earlier when she was talking about getting 25 cents an hour or something like that for her.
Oh, right.
$20 a week as a waitress, whatever that turns into.
Yeah, because she got 25 cents an hour working as a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, with tips, you'll be pulling in $15 to $20 a week.
Yeah.
So hold on, let me...
Woo, woo.
Well, because in this one, her restaurant is...
It made like $47 or something like that.
I think it rounded up to $49, because I was like, remember that.
Oh, boy.
So give me just a second here. Okay, so if she made $49 her first night... They don't specify whether it's gross or net.
Okay.
$829.16 by 2019 money.
Not bad. It's just kind of a small restaurant, so that's not bad. That seems okay.
Yeah. 24 chickens brought them in $829.
Not bad. That's pre the bar. They don't have the bar yet. So
right.
It's
later
literally
in the
just
episode,
food.
They talk about prohibition being repealed.
Honestly, just food, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
25 cents an hour. Ooh. $4.23 by 2019 money.
Womp womp.
All right, $15 a week. $253.82 a week.
That's not bad.
I couldn't live off of it.
Well, that's because you have all those bidet tubes that you're hoarding over here.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. It's very weird to see her getting like $40 to buy food for an entire night at a restaurant, but that's how it works. And it is nice to see her making the biz work. Like, and it's stressful a little bit too.
It is stressful, but it's like in episode one, we saw her not like saying like one chicken without the gravy. And they're like, it's hold the gravy, never without. And here she's calling the shots.
Yeah, she's like, don't call soup, get it yourself, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, love it.
I also feel, was the waitress here that she was talking to, like the head waitress, the waitress from the tea room that she looks down on in derision?
Not sure, but I do know that one of the waitresses was her pie helper that wore the uniform in episode two.
Oh, okay.
I did notice that, so.
Okay, maybe I'm confused, because, yeah, in this one, I thought the head waitress, I was like, is that the chick from the tea room that she, like, goes up to? And was like, oh, I can't do this.
Could be.
Okay.
Not sure. There did seem to be somebody else who worked at the restaurant.
Okay.
By the way, one of my favorite parts about this episode was I love that, like, when it got super busy and they couldn't handle it anymore.
Ida puts on a fucking apron.
Ida puts on, and fucking Lucy comes in. And it's like, I love, here's the, and I'm like, saying, I went off on a whole thing, like,
yeah,
we don't see women helping women that much.
You know, I was thinking that, I was like, is it sexist of me to say that I get a thrill about, like, women doing it for themselves in movies?
I feel like we're programmed to think that women are going to fight against each other in the movie. And, like, to see them just be like, hey, can I help you out? It's great.
Well,
I love it.
Because, like, Ida comes in and she's already tying, like, she came in as a guest at first, had a table onto herself.
Good friend.
Yeah,
love
but then
Ida.
They were running short on tables, dishes were piling up. Ida puts on that apron, she starts taking over front of house.
She's like, give me your starters. What are we doing?
Yeah. And I was like, I love it. She's there for it. But then Lucy comes in, she's like, anything I can help with? And Mildred's like, oh, no, of course not. Ida's like, yeah, there is.
Yes, there is. Thank you.
And
thank you, honey.
I love that Ida is there, because, like, Mildred wants to be the good hostess. She doesn't want to impose on her friends. But Ida's like, no, you can help me.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
It's really satisfying.
It really is to just see this, like, scrappy band of women pulling together and making it work.
And honestly, it is women, because all the servers, the only man who's there working behind the scenes is Pancho. And I don't even think he's the chef. I'm not exactly sure.
See him cook. I think he's just a dishwasher.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what his job is, but it's like, this is women helping women make it happen.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's a huge success, and I'm here to celebrate it.
I love it. Yeah. I while watching, I was like, oh, is it sexist of me to think that, like, this, like, scrappy band of women, like, can't make a restaurant run on their own? But at the same time, it was super thrilling to just, yeah, especially when Ida came back, she's like, okay, let's get down to business here. Let's make this work.
I'm going to toss this out to the Paid and Puke podcast. Let us know if we're being sexist.
Yeah. If we are, we'll own it.
Call us out anytime. But, like, I loved it. So.
I watching these women make it work on their own terms, I was here for it.
It's good. It's real good. I also really like the moment when it turns out that there's, like, two four tops, but they only have room for one, and they're like, well, you have to tell one of them to wait. And so she comes out and she realizes, and she's like, well, we can seat you now, the rest of you have to wait. And she's like, I'm sorry,
we don't have any chairs.
Yeah, it's like she didn't even think that, like, there could be
a wait.
And it's like, the fact that it's happening on opening night is just like, you're so happy for Millie.
Yeah,
good job, Millie.
I mean, if you're gonna have a problem, that's the problem you want.
Yeah, I love it. It's
like,
great.
We don't have enough places for people to wait for our business.
Mm. And you're just so excited for her.
Yeah, and you're just emotionally with her. You're just happy for her. And it's all good. And, like, at the end of the night, they close up shop. They all have a drink to celebrate.
And you're like, Ray who?
Well, I was going to say, like, even Bert's fucking there.
Yeah, Bert, like I said, Bert's not a villain. Bert is not a villain.
Yeah, it's like everyone important in Mildred's life is there, and they're genuinely happy for her.
Yeah, I love it.
I loved when the waitress comes into the kitchen. They're like, someone said, hold the soup, but instead get a glass of tomato juice with salt, celery salt, and blah, blah, blah. And they said that they know that it's unusual, but they always get it. And Mildred's like, oh, I know that one. And it's Vita.
Yeah.
He's like, I know that bitchy order.
That's my daughter.
That's my daughter. Does the same thing at home.
Oh, I love her.
But yeah, it's Bert and Vita who've like taken a seat, and they're like, they're just both genuinely proud of her. And like, and we, the audience, are proud of her too. So it's just like all the players in her life are happy for her and there for her. And yeah, they're having that drink at the end of the night, just all celebrating. And
it really feels like she's going to have a genuine good time.
And
good
it also moment, feels like this good is well earned.
Yeah. Earned good moment. But guess what? Fucking Guy Pearce Monty comes in and wants to fuck her teenage daughter.
Yeah, so
ruins it's everything.
It's determined that Vita is at least 14 in this part.
I'm sorry, really?
Yeah, because Monty says something like, any 14-year-old girl would know this, like, near the end of it.
Yikes.
Which, gross. She doesn't look 14. She looks 11.
Yeah, she looks young. Anyway.
But this is where villain Vita really starts coming out. Ugh. That Christmas scene.
I know.
She, like, opens, like, the case that has the wristwatch in it, and she's like, thanks. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Especially after Mildred qualified it and been like, I'm sorry, this isn't what I wanted to get you.
I don't care if there was fucking socks in that case.
Yeah, thank you.
You fucking fake it.
I know.
I was, oh my God.
Just, Vita sucks.
Her classism came out so much in that scene. And then, of course, there's like a big fight that follows where Vita's got all this like info from Monty.
No, and we haven't talked about the fact that I think it was episode 2 where Mildred spanks Vita.
So there's I don't condone spanking.
Me neither.
Super satisfying.
Vita fucking deserves it. But in this episode, Mildred slaps her, mm-hmm. and then Vita slaps her back.
Yeah.
I was, woo.
Yeah.
I was scandalized by that. That's insane.
It's a weird dynamic between mother and daughter because, like, I think this is the first time where we get the implication that they're competing a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, they're both
for
sort of,
Monty or just in general?
I mean, mostly in general, but once Mildred gets a whiff that Vita is getting information from Monty,
okay,
getting a side of Monty that she's not getting, I think it does spark a little competition between the two.
Yeah.
And because Mildred sees Vita in herself, like it sort of magnifies it or amplifies.
That's important.
A level of competition. And like we see this sort of competition a lot in male coming of age movies,
okay.
Like He Got Game or something like that.
Okay.
Where the student becomes the teacher in a way, but it's usually some physical or athletic feat where the son outdoes the father.
Okay.
In a female-centric movie, it feels different. And I think it's because in, like, female interpersonal politics, sex is on the table more than it is with men.
Mm.
Because it's somewhere near the beginning of episode 3, and I don't remember the exact context now, but it's like, in male-centric stories, if a male's going to, like, succeed financially, he has to do it through his work.
Okay.
But with women, Mildred has the option to either, like, you know,
marry
well,
yeah,
or make it on her own.
Right.
And
right,
there's
right.
sort of this implication that, like, Vita will never have to know what it's like to want for something because she'll just grow up pretty and marry well. Like, her
If she plays piano well, she'll be fine.
Her financial decisions will be dictated by her looks a little bit.
Sure.
Which isn't something that you see in more male-centric stories. And because Vita has youth on her side, that already kind of gives her a leg up on Mildred. Mildred's youth has been spent on Bert.
But it's also something that Mildred doesn't abide by. Mildred is like, you need to earn your living. It's a weird like dichotomy with Mildred, because she wants to provide that like world for her daughter, but she also feels that like personally she needs to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't feel like her daughter needs to earn it, which I think is like
I think that's why she's not at all perturbed by that super harsh piano instructor.
Yeah,
like the one that makes her cry. She's kind of like, this will be good for Vita.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of on board with him.
Yeah.
He's such
a prick.
I love him in
a way.
He's
such a prick.
He's like, you're shitty, but I'll take you as a student. Only if you pay me $100 if I have to listen to her play.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did Guy Pearce call the other shitty, it was like Ivory.
Ivory Tinkler or something.
Yeah. There's an element of like Mildred feeling like, no, this is good because it's going to lift her up.
Build like, a little character in her.
Yeah, because, and it's also like she's not willing or able to do that role for her daughter because she loves her so much because Ray died and now she's put all this investment into her, like blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of reasons why that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. This episode made me realize, like, I never once wanted to grab for my phone during this whole series, and we just finished hour 3.
I know.
And not once was I like, oh, what's going on Twitter right now? I was like, no, I'm invested in this. But at the same time, Todd Haynes' direction in this isn't exactly like, you know, blow your mind. It's real feather touch directing.
There was a moment that blew my mind a little bit. There was a moment where the piano music started as diegetic, where it's like, you know, background music. And then it cuts to a scene, a wordless scene where Vita's playing the piano and she's playing the music that was in the scene before, shows Mildred coming in, listening to the music. And then there's a couple, you know, that's a little scene. And then it like goes to a different scene and that music is still playing and then it turns into diegetic. So it's like diegetic, non-diegetic, diegetic, which I don't know if I've seen before. Maybe in
yeah,
a Quentin Tarantino
that was real
movie.
Subtle. I don't remember that.
Yeah,
but
it's just something that is, it's special in a way that you wouldn't notice normally, but like, that's not something that you normally see in movies. Like, mm-hmm. you just don't see something, especially music, like, swoop in the way that it did. Like, start one way, become something, and then swoop back out. Like, it's just different. And like, it's using the same ingredients to make something special that I haven't seen before. I can't remember another thing. Maybe Quentin Tarantino, but like, I can't remember another time I've seen that before. And I love it.
Yeah, because, I mean, Todd Haynes must be doing something, but I mean, this does fall, like, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I don't remember if it was on or off pod, but like, I just rewatched Pulp Fiction.
Uh-huh.
And with Pulp Fiction, it's hard for me to be super analytical about that movie because really I just kind of get sucked into what's going on, like what the characters are doing, and I forget to be analytical about it. And the same thing's kind of going on here where things seem so natural that I am sucked into the actual human drama and forget to like actually analyze the forum of the scene.
Yeah.
Like, I stop thinking about, like, how is it framed? What quadrant are the characters in? How is this lit? Like, I get sucked into just the story, and I forget to actually be analytical about it.
Well, we talked about it a little bit this episode while it was going on, but, like, there's a scene where Guy Pearce is, like, sitting in a bed, and he's making, like, a huge L shape, but, like, the bottom half of his body is longer than the top. Like he fits the frame of the TV perfectly. Mm-hmm. But then like Mildred is like in a bathroom that's in the background, but when she moves away, the sink is really long and it just like matches perfectly to his body, like the legs of him. And I was just like, this is gorgeous. Just looking at it looks good.
It did sort of remind me of Safe, where I remember I talked about in Safe where nothing seems like they shot a scene in this place because they didn't have an option to not. Like,
yeah.
everything seemed like this is the perfect set to like match the director's vision. I kind of feel the same thing about this, except it's just a little bit more subtle. Like with Safe, I kind of felt like it drew attention to the blocking and the framing and everything like that. And this, even though there's like the same attention to blocking and framing, but you don't notice it the same way.
And I'm not sure. Well, I guess it was last episode. There was a scene where the car's like driving across a bridge. And it
no, looks, that was this one, wasn't it?
I think that was two. But then like three, there was in this one, there was also another one, but it was at night and it was raining.
Yeah.
But like the first one was like, it just like it was a pan across a bridge and it was nothing but a car driving across.
Oh,
it.
You mean
like,
the bridge that they blew up in True Lies?
Yeah, probably.
That, I think that was episode two.
When I'm watching them, I'm like, this is gorgeous. And then in this one, it was 5 seconds of the episode, but it's a car driving away from you on a bridge, and you see like the lights all in a line. You see like the red from the taillights of the car moving, and it's raining, and it just looks like, I don't know, like that scene, all of a sudden, I'm just like, fuck, that looks great. And this is what I talk about when I talk about Todd Haynes, is like his films, I'll just call them that, scream cinema.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I know this is an HBO produced thing and it's meant, it, like, it was meant to be on the TV, but like, I would love to see this on a big screen. Like,
yeah.
Can you imagine?
Well, the opening credits in this alone.
God, we haven't talked about them yet. Thank you. Thank you.
They're super subtle, but they're more vivid in episode three than they were in episode one. Like, the colors start becoming more defined.
They change per episode.
And this is one of those things, it's also super subtle, like, it's just like, I don't know what the design is called, but it's like a stereotypical, like, sunrise design.
Yeah, it's like a Art Deco, like, shading change. I'm making a motion with my hands that you can't see, but...
But,
yeah.
Like, the way that the names and the credits appear on the screen really kind of hits you.
It just really gets you in the mood for it.
It's just, like, because it's muted, like, very dark, like, army grays.
Uh-huh.
Or army greens.
And, like, some oranges and some blues, but they're all muted.
But then, like, the names pop up all in white and just... It's not like a punch in the face necessarily, but it's suddenly there.
Yeah.
And like you notice every name.
But they fade out. Yeah.
Yeah.
They always like jump and then fade.
Yeah. It's just, yeah.
It's a good opening every time. And it's always, it just.
And
really
the music gets you right into the headspace of what's coming up.
Listen, I know I said this last time, but if you have access to watch Mildred Pierce, the Todd Haynes version, watch it right now. It's fucking awesome.
It's really good. Like, honestly, this is hour three, and I am engrossed by it.
I can't wait to find out what's going to happen to Mildred next. Any predictions?
Well, all of our predictions were wrong. At the
I
end
know,
of the
she didn't
last
make
episode.
A chain.
Mildred,
Vita didn't
still,
grow up at all.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, no, all of our predictions were wrong, but... All right, episode four. Like, she has to grow up in episode four. Evan
she
Rachel
fucking
Wood
has to.
Can't be just an adult in the last episode.
Come on.
Honestly, like, we've gone through 3 out of the 5 hours of this, and I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, 2 more hours isn't enough to resolve this.
I know. Right?
Like,
what's going to happen?
I feel like we're only on part, like, 3 of 10.
She still has to, like, get a chain. She still has to fucking, I don't know. What else is going to happen?
Well,
she's
going to have to marry Monty.
Vita has to. Yeah. Oh, she's got so much to do.
She has so much to do and she has so much to go wrong.
I know. It's just going to get worse for her.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to watch.
Yeah. It's really sucking me in. Mm. This is like, it's that good human drama that, like, I don't know, Rob Williams wants to be.
Wait, okay, so we haven't talked about this. How many times have you seen this miniseries?
This is my second time.
Okay, it's only my second, too. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, no, I watched it once. It was, like, right at the beginning. Actually, it would probably be right around 5 years ago that I watched this.
Ooh, okay.
Because it was right after I quit my job at the record store, but was still in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would have been right after New Year's, like January, February of 2015.
Right on. Okay.
So
there we are.
Yeah.
Similar vein. I think I was 2013 or 2014, somewhere in there.
I think this was only released in like 2013.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have watched it too much earlier than that.
I had a HBO Go password from someone who got it from someone who had an HBO account, but they were a hookup. And so they just passed it around, and lots of people had it eventually.
Like the hookup.
Yeah, exactly. And I watched it on that. Yeah, it must have been 2013, 2014, somewhere in there. So second time, I'm engulfed in it. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen. We're going to take a break now and get some food.
Yeah, before we get too drunk.
Oh, God, because we still have two more hours of Todd Haynes.
I'm pumped for it, though.
I know. Like, I can't wait to find out what's going to happen to Millie.
Yeah. Like, honestly, like, when I woke up this morning, I was like, oh, God, we have this full thing ahead of us today. But now I'm watching, I'm like, I can't wait to just come back and watch another episode.
It's so good. If you have access to HBO, watch it now. I can't stress it enough. It's so good.
So good.
Anyway, we'll find out what happens in episode 4.
Shortly hereafter. Yeah.